This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, August 3rd. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The House passes a patient's bill of rights, but some physicians say there's a lot wrong with the rights bill. Israeli troops shot and killed a Palestinian they claim was planting a bomb in Nablus in the unending cycle of violence in the West Bank. And the Navy ignores pleas from the residents of Vieques and renews its bombing program on their homeland. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Police say last night's car bomb explosion in West London bore all the hallmarks of the real IRA splinter group. Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams condemned the attack. Anastasia Kershaw reports from London.
Irish terrorists, the real IRA, are suspected of exploding a bomb in London last night that injured seven people and was heard 2 kilometres away. Police received a coded warning before the last bomb went off at midnight and were busy ushering people away from the area when it exploded. Witnesses described feeling a terrific force of a blast and seeing clouds of black smoke. Reports say the real IRA's ploy could be an attempt to disrupt the British and Irish peace plan, which must be approved next week. The breakaway IRA group has been expected by government sources to mount a mainland bombing campaign after the UK general election 2 months ago. This is Anastasia Kershaw reporting for Free Speech Radio News from London.
Democrats spoke out in Washington outlining the principal focus of their immigration policy. Amanda Blitz was at the Capitol.
Majority Leader Tom Daschle mapped out family reunification, improved border safety, earned legalization, and temporary worker programs as their main approach to immigration reform. House Democratic Leader Richard Gephardt highlighted that this was not a new issue for Democrats, who have been leading the way on immigration reform for many years.
In the last Congress, Democrats offered a comprehensive immigration proposal that was rejected by House and Senate Republican leadership. These principles represent a restatement of our commitment to this important issue.
Both senators and representatives welcomed the efforts of President Bush and President Fox, but noted that a policy must be put in place which will help all immigrants and not just Mexicans. Congressman Gutierrez stressed the importance of immigrants and their contributions to this country.
Irregardless of which country you came from, we're going to have a policy that treats you with equity, with fairness, and with respect. We will not support a policy that pits one group against another. Immigrants together, working, have made this America what it is today, and that's a Democratic Party principle.
At the Capitol, for Free Speech Radio News, this is Amanda Blitz.
Investigations of the use of excessive force by police continue in Prince George's County, Maryland. Tara Donner reports from Washington.
The FBI recently launched 7 civil rights investigations into cases in which Prince George's County, Maryland police officers shot or beat people. In the last 2 years, more than 30 federal probes have involved PG County police officers who, according to a Washington Post investigation, have shot and killed more people per officer than any other large police force in the country in the last 10 years. The victims in each of the 7 cases currently under FBI scrutiny were unarmed men. 4 of the men were shot in the back, 2 were beaten to death after being taken into police custody, and 1 was a college student shot to death in an altercation with police. In their own investigation, top police officials have concluded that each of the shootings was justified. In addition to the criminal investigations by the FBI, the Justice Department is examining the entire Prince George's County Police Department to determine whether there is an ingrained pattern of excessive force and racial discrimination. In Washington, D.C., for Free Speech Radio News, this is Tara Donner.
Juvenile offender Napoleon Beasley is scheduled to die by execution in Texas on August 15th. Mary O'Grady is in Austin and has his story.
On August 15th, the state of Texas plans to execute Napoleon Beasley, who will turn 25 on Sunday, August the 5th. Beasley was 17 when he murdered John Luttig, who was the father of a Virginia federal judge. Beasley is African American and is one of 31 death row inmates in Texas who were sentenced to death for crimes they committed when they were 17. Since 1982, when executions resumed in Texas, 9 of the 249 prisoners who've been executed in Texas were under 18 at the time of their offense. Beasley's 2 accomplices have recanted some of the damaging testimony they gave about Beasley's state of mind at the time of the trial. Beasley's lawyer also argues Beasley's all-white jury did not give him a fair trial. citing one juror who flies the Confederate flag from her house and another juror who refuses to do business with black customers. Texas Governor Rick Perry said he would review the case to make sure that due process was followed, but added that then this individual will be treated like any other cold-blooded murderer in the state of Texas. Only one condemned prisoner has ever received clemency in Texas since 1982. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mary O'Grady in Austin.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.
The White House and Republican lawmakers in the House struck a deal this week on a patient's bill of rights. And last night, the House of Representatives passed the bill by a vote of 226 to 203. All House Republicans supported the bill. Only five Democrats voted for it. The legislation creates the rights for millions of Americans in managed health care programs while limiting the number of lawsuits against insurance companies. Under the plan, insurers must give patients access to specialists and allow women to visit obstetricians and gynecologists without a referral. All patients must be allowed emergency care at the nearest hospital, even if it's not with the plan. The bill delivered President Bush a sorely needed political victory, who had argued other versions of the bill would encourage frivolous lawsuits. But some physicians are disappointed in the final version of the bill. Quentin Young, National Coordinator of Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, characterizes the Charlie Norwood legislation as corrupt. Norwood, himself a physician, led a six-year campaign for patients' rights, but Dr. Young feels he dropped the ball.
Well, Dr. Norwood, a Georgia dentist, took the lead in this struggle to get some ability to get retribution against the abuses of HMOs and held himself out for, as far as I know, 2 long years as this remarkable conservative Republican professional who was going to hold the line. And he, a lot of people on the Republican and Democrat side took his leadership and trusted in him to be firm. And a few hours with the president, and he comes out saying that was the only way to get the president's signature on the bill. He doesn't get it. The point was to give the president a bill that worked and let him sign it or not and take the political heat. By taking the heat off the president and giving a bill that the HMOs are dying for and, of course, feel their money was well spent is a tragedy. And yet another disappointment for the American people, both on the health front and the campaign finance reform front. This is a total sellout.
The millions of Americans who have managed health care, what do they come out of this plan with that they didn't have heretofore?
It does provide for certain elementary things that I never dreamed we'd consider victories, the right to have a gynecologist in certain circumstances, the right to review complaints. People scream for a Bill of Rights. What they need is a decent health system.
So what kind of recourse does the American health care public have?
We'll get where we want to go when the popular will for universal care, everybody in, nobody out, a comprehensive package, using the money that's in place. It's important to say just at this point that we spend twice as much per capita as the next countries in the world. We have the money in place. We have a superb, well-trained health workforce, the envy of the world. We have more than enough hospitals. In a word, we have all the tools. The only thing, we've made this fatal error of giving it over to a venture capital that wants to maximize profits. That's very good for certain kind of products. I repeat, it doesn't work in healthcare, and people are getting fed up. When we start electing people who are for it, And yes, repealing or rejecting people like Norwood who aren't for it, we will have this question answered. That's the way things happen in this country.
Dr. Quentin Young with the Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. Israeli troops shot and killed a Palestinian today who they said was planting a bomb near Nablus, setting off a gun battle that raged for hours. Palestinian officials said two Arabs had been wounded in the gun battle near Nablus. Israeli military officials said Palestinians had fired two mortar rounds at the Jewish settlement of Kfar Darom in Gaza. Later, Palestinian security officials said three tanks briefly entered a Palestinian-controlled area nearby, and the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat told reporters the incursion forced him to take a different route to his office in Gaza City. Arafat was returning home from meetings in Rome with Pope John Paul and Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. Some American officials are calling for a halt to the violence on both sides. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Raphael Kraft is in Tel Aviv and files this report.
A bomb attack has been thwarted today by Israeli police as a 23-year-old Palestinian woman from Nablus was to blow herself up in Tel Aviv Central bus station. According to information revealed by British newspaper The Guardian, U.S. is secretly drawing up detailed plans for the deployment of an observer force to monitor flashpoints in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, resurrecting an idea that seemed to have been killed off by Israeli objections 2 weeks ago. It is the first positive sign of diplomatic activity for weeks in a Middle East that finds itself in an unprecedented spiral of violence since the start of the Intifada. The action comes shortly after Israeli helicopter attack on Hamas offices last Tuesday, which killed 8 people, among them 2 Hamas political leaders and 2 children. A U.S. State Department spokesman said that the U.S. has always been against the policy of assassinations. U.S. officials asked Israeli counterpart to understand Washington's interest in the region. Such actions damage American relations with other countries in the Middle East. However, the U.S. did not publicly condemn the use of U.S.-made Apache helicopters for the missile attack on the Hamas offices. Despite the critics, the Israeli cabinet confirmed this policy, emphasizing what they call Israel's right to exercise its fundamental right to self-defense. The 2 Hamas activists killed in the helicopter attack were the political link in between the armed faction of Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. Since the Dolphinarium suicide bomb attack on the 1st of June, killing 20 Israelis, Hamas had not struck against civilians inside the Israeli territory as summoned by Yasser Arafat. This provocation has revived anger among the Palestinian population. Yasser Arafat said yesterday the region had reached the point of catastrophe. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Raphael Kraft in Tel Aviv.
A fresh round of Navy exercises involving about 23,000 sailors, Marines, and soldiers began today, despite pleas from politicians and residents to stop using the island of Vieques as a target. Even before the bombing, 7 protesters broke into Navy grounds and headed for the bombing range in an effort to interrupt the exercises. Now, the Navy reports, Puerto Rican police are refusing to arrest what they say are hundreds of demonstrators who tore down 550 feet of fence around the base. The Navy reports Puerto Rican police are also refusing to arrest protesters who peacefully laid down on the road leading into the base when the Navy attempted to bring in replacement fencing. The maneuvers began with the Vela Gulf, a guided missile cruiser, and another ship firing 70-pound shells at the range. The exercises are the final training for the Theodore Roosevelt Battle Group based in Norfolk, Virginia, which will probably head to the Persian Gulf or the Mediterranean next. The renewed Navy testing ignores a non-binding referendum passed last week in which 68% of the residents voted to end the testing immediately. On Tuesday, the Pentagon asked Congress to cancel a binding referendum scheduled for November. But as we hear in this report from Free Speech Radio News correspondent Shannon Novak, the residents of Vieques are determined to have their voices heard.
This afternoon at the Camp for Peace and Justice in Vieques, protesters cheered as they watched the first arrests for civil disobedience in this round of maneuvers.
How many people have been arrested?
3. According to the spokesperson, the 3 are members of the Puerto Rico Bar Association. They now join the list of over 1,200 who in the past 14 months have been arrested for acting as human shields on the bombing range in hope of temporarily halting maneuvers. In an altercation last night, 6 protesters attempted to penetrate the range. They were met by federal marshals and dogs. Reporters on the scene told me the protesters were behaving peacefully when marshals began to throw tear gas and shoot rubber bullets. An Associated Press photographer was hospitalized. Navy Public Affairs Officer Catherine Good said that today protesters were throwing Molotov cocktails at Navy personnel and that Puerto Rico police were not assisting in any way the United States Navy. The Commonwealth has an additional 250 police officers on Vieques right now. Catherine Good spoke about this round of maneuvers.
Began the training for the ships with their naval surface fire support for their qualifications, and they will continue to qualify using their 5-inch guns through Saturday Each ship will take a turn. Whenever their turn comes up, they'll come in close to shore.
The Vieques Commissioner, Dr. Juan Fernandez, said that this round of maneuvers is like a graduation exercise, a full dress rehearsal for war. Puerto Rico Governor Sila Calderon, who campaigned on a platform of ending the Navy's practice maneuvers, dropped $366,000 this week to run full-page ads in six major U.S. newspapers. The ads read, "President Bush, we the people of Vieques voted to stop the bombing now. We know you can provide a more compassionate government." 30% of Vieques residents voted Sunday for the Navy to stay. They are backed by some pro-statehood Puerto Rican senators. The Navy and the pro-Navy movement say the protesters are independistas, members of the island's political party who represent an end to the Commonwealth's territorial status. I asked protest leader Robert Rabin about his personal agenda. Is your work with trying to remove the United States Navy from the island of Vieques in any way associated with the desire for Puerto Rico to be independent from the United States?
Is my work, I work with the Committee for the Rescue and Development of Vieques, and our committee is dedicated to getting the Navy out of Vieques, to having land returned to the people of Vieques, to push for the decontamination, environmental restoration, because we all believe that Vieques has greater possibilities or better possibilities, or better uses than bombing.
In San Juan, I'm Shannon Novak for Free Speech Radio News.
Eight paramilitary police officers testifying at a military court yesterday denied any role in the massacre of scores of young men last fall amid political upheaval in the Ivory Coast. The officers are accused of murder in the killings of 57 men whose bodies were found in a field after a chaotic presidential election. Bodies of the 57 victims were discovered in a field on October 27th after President Gbagbo claimed victory. Most victims, primarily members of Ivory Coast's Muslim ethnic group, had been shot in the head. Violence broke out as Gbagbo supporters clashed with those of the opposition leader, Alassane Dramani Ouattara, when he called for new elections. Ouattara's party says most of the victims were his supporters. A UN report released last month concluded paramilitary officers were responsible. Human rights groups estimate about 175 people died in violence linked to the election. Human rights groups also charge Gbagbo's government with fomenting hatred and violence against refugees from neighboring African countries in an effort to marginalize his political opposition. Rory Mulholland reports from Abidjan.
There is no problem with foreigners in this country.
So says an advisor to Ivory Coast's president, Laurent Gbagbo. But that's not what I heard from a group of pineapple farmers who live near the village of Petit Paris in the southeast of the country. The men, all immigrant farmers from neighboring Burkina Faso, took me out to their fields to show how their crop had been ripped out of the earth by local Ivorians. This farmer says that after locals destroyed the crop, they planted red stakes in the earth as a sign that the Burkinabe were forbidden to work the fields. He's lived in the Ivory Coast for 30 years and can't understand why this should happen now. But he says such incidents have caused thousands of his compatriots to return home. Ivory Coast is now suffering from a deep recession, but over the past three decades, the country has been one of the richest in the whole of West Africa, and agriculture is the key to that wealth.
It's the world's biggest cocoa producer and Africa's biggest coffee producer. Then under 33 years of Foubou Boigny, the father of independence from 1960 to 93, it was very much built up on the sweat and labor of foreign workers from Burkina Faso, Mali and other Sahelian countries.
Kate Davenport is West Africa correspondent for the financial newswire Bridge News. She says that xenophobia, combined with political instability that has dogged the country since its first coup d'etat a year and a half ago, is seriously damaging the economy. Many farms are owned by foreigners, and the thousands who have fled the country often left their crops unharvested. The port in the economic capital, Abidjan, has seen a downturn in activity. Kate Davenport says that the government's actions have encouraged xenophobia.
The attempted coup d'etat on 7th and 8th of January saw a rise in xenophobia again, basically because the government said that the coup plotters had been foreigners. And there was an immediate reaction. I spoke to one guy at the meat market in Port-Bouë who said that a lot of students from, Ivorian students from the local residents, because there's a Cité Universitaire right next to the meat market, literally went out and lynched foreigners and Senegalese, Malians and so on who were working come to the market.
But the government denies there is any hostility to foreigners in the country. Freedom Neruda is an advisor to President Laurent Gbagbo.
Today in Côte d'Ivoire, at least 26% of the population are not Ivorian citizens. So how can people say that in such a country there is xenophobia?
Mr. Neruda does concede that the political turmoil of the past 16 months has left Ivorian society divided. But to heal those wounds, he says, President Gbagbo is holding a reconciliation commission.
It's a kind of truth and reconciliation commission, as we have seen one in South Africa. He has to meet the political parties, the NGOs, Christians, the Muslims, everybody in this country, so that each of them will say what do they think of the process of reconciliation.
But the opposition rally of Republicans or RDR party is unconvinced. Aboubakar Ouattara is one of its spokesmen.
What President Gbagbo is doing now, it is a joke, because as far as the International Monetary Fund are concerned, the World Bank, the European Community are concerned, the problem is that they want to see social peace before giving us money. So he's trying to show people that we are living in peace, everything is all right, which is not true, because what he's doing underground is very different.
The RDR believes that the government encourages xenophobia to help keep the party's leader, Alassane Ouattara, from standing in elections. Ouattara was once Prime Minister of Ivory Coast, but the Supreme Court has since ruled that he's ineligible to stand as a candidate in elections because he's not an Ivorian national.
To reconcile the country together, we should start again new elections. As we have proved during the last election, IDIA is the most popular party in the country. So, first of all, Alassane Ouattara should be candidate. So we should start election in order to have a certain credibility, to give certain credibility to our political institutions. It is only by this way we should reconcile people.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rory Mulholland in Abidjan, Ivory Coast.
A 12-year-long battle against the Temelín nuclear power plant in the southern Czech Republic on the Austrian border is coming to a head this summer, as officials are preparing to turn the reactor on for a test run. Critics say Temelín has fatal flaws that make it too dangerous to operate. The startup of the reactor has been delayed many times by a list of technical problems and construction delays. Over the years, dozens of major blockades, mass protests, and arrests have been made over the Temelín. Both the Austrian and German governments opposing the project, but power company officials say the project will go forward while the activists in border countries insist that it must end. Free Speech Radio News' Charles Michael Ray has this story on the Temelín nuclear power plant.
The massive cooling towers of the Temelín nuclear power plant can be seen for miles in all directions, looming over the mixed forests, small towns, and rolling meadows of South Bohemia near the Czech-Austrian border. The Temelín Information Center is a small, renovated 14th century castle that sits just across the road from the power plant itself. The information center is filled with educational material, a 3D movie theater, and several interactive models of the plant. Here, a group of high school students is working on a scaled-down model of the reactor core. If they push the wrong button, an alarm sounds, the reactor turns red and goes into overload.
This is chill.
Ironically, at this very moment, just across the road, the real reactor was undergoing an actual radioactive leak of several cubic meters of coolant water. The contaminated water spilled from the reactor core into the containment shell and was cleaned without incident. Temelín officials say it was a minor mishap, but critics say the accident was only one in a series of problems at the plant that point to a major lack of safety culture at Temelín. Jan Baranek, executive director of Friends of the Earth, Czech Republic, began work against Temelín 12 years ago. He says the project has been plagued from the start. Baranek says the plant is dangerous because it uses a combination of Eastern and Western technology. namely an old Soviet Chernobyl-type reactor core that is run by computer systems built in the West.
It, however, faces a lot of technical problems. It was a unique project. It has never, there is no other reactor like this anywhere in the world, so it was obvious that there will be big problems with starting it up, which is the case today when there were several emergency shutdowns, there were leakages, there were fires, and now the whole power plant is shut down.
The chief of public relations at Temelin, Milan Nebezaj, says the plant is safe and that similar nuclear power plants with a mix of Eastern and Western technologies are in operation in Finland. Nebezaj goes on to add that the plant is the same design as the Dukovany power plant in operation in the Eastern Czech Republic.
So this nuclear power plant is prepared for safe operation. We have made some great improvements in information and control system, in other things, for example, in fuel and other things. So I think nuclear power plant is at the same level of safety as others in the world, and the U.S. or in the Western Europe.
Both Germany and Austria disagree. Temelin sits near the border of Austria, a nuclear-free country, and the plant fails to meet German safety standards. Both countries have officially asked the Czech Republic to remove Temelin from the power grid because of their concerns. On top of that, the German power company, E.ON, a major buyer of Czech surplus power, recently stopped purchasing electricity from the Czech Republic over safety concerns at Temelin. Corinne Weiten with Friends of the Earth Austria says the disagreement over Temelin has strained relations with the Czech Republic and border countries. In Austria, major politicians from across the political spectrum have called for a halt in the succession process of the Czech Republic into the European Union until it deals with safety issues at Temelin. While the Austrian government recently made an official comment that it would not try to block the Czech Republic's entry into the European Union, Weiten says nuclear safety issues need to be included in the criteria for EU entry.
It's been a very long struggle, and my hope is that that there can be an agreement between the European Union, Austria, the Czech Republic, not to take this thing under grid, not to really make us more problems for the next 20 years, because we have already enough problems with nuclear power plants around the world and especially in Europe. So we hope that Temelin will be a first positive sign to phase out nuclear power in the whole Europe.
While the debate goes on, Temelin officials continue to work to bring the power plant online. Back in the Temelin Information Center, a 3D movie informs visitors in English about the inner workings of a nuclear reactor.
While the principle of a nuclear reactor is quite simple, its structure is in fact quite complicated.
Greenpeace nuclear expert for Central Europe, Jan Haverkamp, says that nuclear energy is not an environmentally friendly replacement for coal.
If Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney are going to go for a centralized energy planning like they're looking to go to, we should place a very strong warning that they're also going to go to, or away from democracy there, that they're going to go to more need for media control to sell these kind of things, to more need for mind control, so to speak, not to get too much resistance, because resistance is expensive.
Activists say they hope and expect that the technical problems and the political pressure will put an end to Temelin before the power plant goes on the grid. While Germany and Austria continue to call for the project to be shut down, company officials and the Czech government insist that Temelin will be in full operation by the end of the year. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Prague.
Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. I'm Verna Avery Brown.